Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Hoop Talks Live podcast. I am Sean Woodley without Mitch Robson today. I'm joined today by someone that you'll be able to see tomorrow at the Hoop Talks Live show at the Rivoli. If you haven't bought tickets yet, make sure you do that, homestandsports.com. And to help me tee up the show, to help me talk about the Raptors and this Raptors-specific edition of the podcast, from Sportsnet is Michael Grange. Michael, how are you?
I'm great, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. I'm still kind of buzzing off that game last night, the Raptors beating the Rockets in what was... I guess the most signature win the Raptors have this season. OG Anunoby started and played incredibly well. Kyle Lowry seemed to really find his groove again, although he's still stuck on 19 points as a season high. DeMar DeRozan, you know, things got a little hairy, I think, for like 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, but overall the offense looked really good and crisp, and it was a big win. Like, is this, honestly, when's the last time the Raptors had a win this big in a regular season? It's been a while, I think.
Well, I'd have to, certainly not this year. I mean, I'd have to look it up, I guess. But, you know, I think what was significant was how much they needed it.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that this season has been a horrible start by any stretch, but you know, they're pretty much, I think, exactly where they were this time a year ago and even the year before that. Like, they were kind of puttering along at this stage of the year before they went off and won the division again. So, I think, but what was key here heading into it for me was, you know, there were some patterns emerging that were, if not red flags, at least areas of concern. And you know, when you go into San Antonio and you're up nearly double figures in the fourth and you don't win when they don't have Kawhi Leonard, and then you are up five with less than 2 minutes left in Golden State, and you get Golden Stated and you lose that game. And, you know, you come home to Washington off that trip and you got a chance to get what could be a critical tiebreaker type game against the Wizards, who are without John Wall. And, you probably put in your worst effort of the season, arguably. And then Boston, you don't respond properly in Boston. So you run out of chances to make up ground. And I think maybe for their own confidence as much as anyone else, to go into Houston and play, like, I don't know if you can say they played perfectly, but they played about as close to perfectly as they possibly can. And I think that lets everyone just kind of go, okay, maybe if we were losing a little bit of faith in what we're trying to get done here, this is proof that we might be on the right path.
Do you think it's fair that after that Boston game, people kind of seemed, I don't know, out on the idea that they could possibly change? I mean, what's your sort of take on how this change has gone? The culture reset has been a thing that's been thrown around a million times, and I bet Masai Ujiri wishes he'd never said those two words. But I don't know. Like, for me, I think it's a process, and they're 13 games in now, and I think we saw... You know, I get why people, when you look at the fourth quarter of games and things kind of revert back and people get frustrated. At the same time, there's reasons why, you know, two of the games in which the Raptors have had the worst fourth quarters have come against the defenses of, you know, the Celtics and the Warriors. Like, those are very good defensive teams who make it hard for you to do, you know, creative things on offense, and they switch everything and they jump passing lanes. So in some cases, like, iso ball is kind of the safest way to go. Like, how would you grade, I guess, the job that the Raptors have done in switching things over this season from what they've been the last few years?
You know, I would say overall, I've been very impressed, you know, because it is, there's significant changes, and they've been able to do it with, you know, a really young team and, with significant, you know, the departure of some pretty dependable veterans from a year ago, and they've done it maybe with their best player, their most important player, Kyle Lowry, being the slowest in some ways to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
So I give him full marks, but I think what was concerning was, you know, as I say, a pattern that was emerging in their fourth quarter production was really poor relative to their production. And the other three quarters of the game, statistically at least, and it would seem to show up and be most evident against, you know, in those moments that we've described. And sure, you know, the Boston Celtics look like they're going to make a lot of teams look bad in any sequence. obviously the way they've been playing, and Golden State is Golden State. But, you know, the point is, when you do, it's not about being really good against, it's hard to, maybe the Knicks, it's about being really competitive against teams that are really, really good. And that's, as we all know, has been the Raptors' problem in the postseason. I think you were looking for signs of progress in that regard. You know, it's about, are you too quick to revert to old habits under pressure? And I would say up until last night, that would be a fair criticism. When it comes to very specific possessions, you know, when you're down to 2, 3, 4 possessions in a game or less, I think getting the ball to your top guys and trying to create a favorable possession in a mismatch is good basketball. It's more just how soon you begin to revert to those habits in the course of the fourth quarter. You don't want to see that. And I think you were seeing that last night against Houston. As you pointed out, there's that little stretch there where they seem to get pretty panicky pretty quickly. And, you know, there's still like 8, 9 minutes left in the game. And that tendency is, I think, the one you want to try and fight against. And they did last night.
I wonder how much Houston just being terrifying with how quickly they can put points up was like weighing on them. And like, if I can imagine being up against Houston and having like a 12 point lead probably isn't the most comfortable thing in the world, considering the way they can just kind of explode on you. But it was really encouraging. And I guess the most encouraging thing outside of the Raptors, like not completely choking it away, was OG Anunoby. Can you remember a Raptors rookie who felt this exciting or this fun this soon?
He looks like he's kind of like the anti Joey Graham. Right? Like, you know, it's like they have all the same attributes, but OG Anunoby is the guy who, in your mind's eye, executes what you want, you wish you could happen almost before you can think it. And you know, poor Joey Graham, you know, he was the opposite, right? Like you'd watch him, you go, no, you got to do this. You didn't do it. and. You know, so he's kind of, I think that's what's maybe most pleasing is you can see him do, it's how he thinks the game, how easily he processes the game and can impact the game. And he's certainly got all the physical tools, which is, you know, it's obviously going to catch your eye. But I think what everyone's really getting excited about is how he can, he's that rare kind of energizer type player who has a really high basketball IQ and a very confident, and he believes in his IQ. It's not like he's seeing plays and kind of wondering, I'm a rookie. He sees him and he makes a play. And that is sort of what is really jumping out to me and obviously a lot of other people, because it is kind of exciting. And he's found money, right? Like this is no one was expecting any. No one's expecting... the expectations for him couldn't have been much lower. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to end up being a bit of a project, and here he is, you know, clearly part of the rotation, clearly a key role, going to have a key role, and you can only expect he'll get better week by week.
It might be a little early to pull the plug on the Norm Powell starting experiment, but with OG starting last night playing so well, with Powell still kind of struggling to find his way, are you on team start Anunoby now and just going forward, or do you think Powell should have that job back to just at least give him some more time to try to sort things out and whatever he's gone through with this season?
I do think it's worth a serious look with Anunoby starting, and it's no disrespect to Powell, who, you know, after, you know, I think he was really struggling, obviously shooting the ball early on, and that was kind of filtering into the rest of his game. I mean, I think he's been pretty good the last handful of games, but all you start thinking about when you do watch that second unit and everyone's kind of running at CJ Miles, like, wow, wouldn't Norm Powell look pretty good out there? Right? And just as, you know, just as a counterbalance, and it would give him way more free reign to kind of be a mini DeMar with that second unit and just attack and do all the things he's really good at. So I think it looks like, and again, we're probably getting pretty excited because he did hit three or four threes. I think if he was 0 for 4 from three last night, we'd be a lot less encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And that could happen tonight. But I think he looks like a really good fit in with that starting lineup. And I think Norm would solve whatever few problems the second unit has. I think he would only make them better. So I'd be surprised if it's the last we see of Ananobi as a starter. I just wonder if he's just gonna lock it down right away, or they'll kind of toggle back and forth for a little while.
Yeah, and part of me wants to see Norm Powell and DeLon Wright play together more, because they've had just some really fun times in like garbage time or in summer league and things like that. That's always been a fun pairing for me. So I'm down to watch those guys run and dunk on people. I'm cool with that. Have you been Ananobi'd yet, but in a scrum with him yet?
Yeah, a couple times.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't quite got a handle on it. I mean, I'm sure it's entertaining for people to watch from a bit of a distance, and so there's a fine line, to walk between him being a little bit irreverent and not sort of playing along a little bit, and him coming off as a little bit. I don't mind a little bit more. It can, in person, feel a little bit like he's trying to make you look stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
And which I'm sure might be amusing for other people, but to be the object of that is never that much fun, particularly because there's no good reason for it. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. I mean, I don't know if it's the standard operating procedure, but for most rookies in the NBA, but we'll see how it works out.
Yeah, I'm excited to see who eventually breaks him open and like has like a good sit down with him or something like that. Because like he does seem like an insanely intelligent dude, and like I get a kick out of.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times with rookies, a lot of players, but rookies in particular, it's just their shyness and their lack of comfort that kind of keeps these. I mean, DeMar DeRozan was maybe the worst interview ever. Very early in his career, and I never would have predicted he would have emerged as a really thoughtful, interesting guy to speak with on or off the record. He just didn't seem to want to. He just seemed so shy, I guess would be the way to put it.
Yeah.
Whereas Ananobi, it's clear that it's not just him being shy. It feels like it's a routine he's adopted. So, like I said, it'll be interesting to see if he ever wants to play along or not.
Yeah, for sure. I get a kick out of it, I think, but I also have not yet been on the receiving end of one of his pop like answers. So, I guess my opinion might change of that if that does come to pass. But he's been awesome. He's been really fun, and he has. I think. It's kind of speaks to the whole team building sort of mentality that I think that Masai Ujiri's gone about here, and just the success of it. I think that you just have this 23rd pick that you get as part of a trade to offload Grievous Vasquez, and you also get Norm Powell in that trade. It kind of affirms everything that I think Masai's tried to do with this team in terms of like building young while also being good. I think it's a success story for sure. Just the fact that he's looked so good, like a month or 2 months ahead of when he was supposed to even play. It's very exciting to have a guy like this, I gotta say. Let's bump around the league a little bit before I let you go. The Cavs, they had that win against the Knicks this week. It seems like they're back. They're tweeting Arthur memes together and they're happy, and it's great to see. They seem like they're enjoying each other once again after that win. I don't know if this was all just like a month-long slow build that was like an intentional, playing off as if they were like a bad team before LeBron wanted to show the world at Madison Square Garden that he's still LeBron. I don't know. I'm not going to put it past them because LeBron's weird, but I don't know. Are you still kind of in the camp that the Cavs are the team to beat? There's not like the Celtics. I think the Celtics are a really great story, and I think they play harder than I think most teams play in the playoffs, than they're doing that in November, and that might catch up to them at some point, but their defense is incredible. Is there still nothing in the way of LeBron this year, though. I kind of am leaning towards that.
I'm of the mind that I do think that it's going to be a little bit harder. I mean, anything would be harder than what they were. Like, they were 12-1, 12-0, I think, through the playoffs last year. The 12-1, I guess. So, you know, any resistance would be more resistance than they got last year. I do think that they're not as good, and we'll have to check in again. It's obvious they're not as good, right? Like, they lost Kyrie Irving, who's pretty damn good, and they don't have yet Isaiah Thomas, who's supposed to be pretty damn good, but is hurt. So, you know, for the moment, they're not as good as they were, and I guess the question will be what kind of price it is exacted on the likes of LeBron to keep them in touch with, you know, at least a home seed in the East before they can get their full roster back. But I also think that it's a lot to expect, even if and when Thomas comes back and he's as good as he ever was, for, you know, a team to develop the kind of chemistry you need to be as good as you can be. And so I think if there was a year the Cavs are going to stumble, I think it'll be this year. And all that said, you know, it is amazing to me that they're 7-7. like for all the numbers you kind of look through, and you know, you look at the teams that have beaten them, and then you go, wow, but they're only 500. Like you kind of think they're like 3-11, but I am not bullish on the Cavs. I think that they are ripe to be exposed, and chances are LeBron will prove me wrong.
I guess it's two levels of like worry about the Cavs. It's a will they get to the East level of worry, and will they pose any challenge to the Warriors? And I kind of think the latter half of that is already out. Like, I don't think that's going to be a challenge in the finals if and when they do get there. Just there's not enough good defensive players on the team. And I kind of have concerns about Isaiah Thomas against the Warriors defense as opposed to Kyrie Irving against the Warriors defense. There's a lot of really bad defenders there, and I just don't think that's going to hold up. In terms of the East, though, I still think, you know, I mean, what's your outlook for Boston? Because they're awesome right now, and they're playing incredible defense, as I mentioned already. Can this hold up? Like, once Kyrie's back and Horford's healthy or whatever, like, once these guys are all back and healthy and not dealing with head injuries anymore, is this a team that you think can be, like, one of the teams that, you know, hops on a vulnerable Cavs team, or is it someone from the Milwaukee, Washington, Toronto, you know, class of teams that you think is more likely?
Yeah, I think Boston, you know, more because of I think they're a team that will improve as the year goes on, just because a guy like Jason Tatum will be, you know, he won't be a raw rookie in February. He'll have 50 games, and he's already pretty good. The same with Jaylen Brown. That guy just seems to be, you know, getting better all the time, and he's got that kind of edginess and toughness that you know, looks like it'll hold up. And on top of that, you know, I think they're really good. So I think that they have a style of play and an identity to play that I think will work, and they will. I think they're going to be a threat all year long. And you know, going through the East, who else could knock off Cleveland? I mean, I think Washington's top six or seven is really good.
Yeah,
I think depth is an issue, but presumably in the playoffs it shouldn't be as much of an issue. And I think the Raptors have a chance. You know, I really do. I think. You know, they've been through the toughest part of their schedule now, or will be after tonight. And, you know, if they can kind of be up in that, I think they have the kind of roster that will be really good in the regular season, because they have so much depth and they have so much quality on their second unit. So I can see them kind of really being in the race for the two seed, if not the one. And does that translate into the playoffs? I don't know. But I just don't think Cleveland's as good. And so I think, as a result, the door is open for Washington, Toronto, and Milwaukee, which we haven't talked about. But I mean, they have a single player who, I mean, I don't want to say he's better than LeBron James, but he's pretty darn close.
He's really goddamn good. And yeah, the Bledsoe thing with them too, it makes them so they just have like less bad players on the roster, I think, and like more adults who know how to play basketball and less minutes for Matthew Dellavedova and types like that. So the Bucks are going to be interesting. Michael, this was interesting. Thank you so much for joining us on the Hoop Talks podcast. Very excited to have you and Doug Smith and Sherm Hamilton on the final panel tomorrow at Hoop Talks. Once again, if you haven't bought tickets, make sure you do that. Go to homestandsports.com, click on events, and click on the Hoop Talks event for tomorrow. If you use the podcast, or sorry, use the promo code Woodley or Grange, I think either of those work, you'll get a discount on tickets. So make sure you do that, and we hope to see you there. Michael, I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for coming on, man, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Great job. Appreciate it.
Cheers.